My name's Bob Milne. I'm semi-retired, working 2 days a week at the moment. But previously, when I retired, after 13 years as chaplain at Greylands Mental Hospital. So, like Tony Abbott, while I'm not the suppository of all wisdom in relation to mental health and spirituality, I think I've learned a little bit in the 13 years I was at Greylands. I think I've got about 25 minutes and then there's questions. But if people, because I'm not the suppository of all wisdom, if other people want to contribute during, then I'm fine with that as well. I want it to be a little bit more interactive and conversational than me talking at you. But I would like to start with two things, and that is the prevalence and correlation. So the prevalence, research indicates that 1 in 4 people will experience some form of mental illness in their lifetime. 1 in 4. So, and that's growing. It used to be 1 in 5 about sort of 8 years ago, and now it's 1 in 4. So it's growing. And the other one is the correlation. Now, studies in Broken Hill a few years ago with both inpatient and outpatient indicated that 80% of them rated spirituality as important or very important in their lives. 80%. There were studies done in Brazil, again, with inpatient and outpatient, same result. 80% rated spirituality as important or very important. The interesting thing is that in the same study in Broken Hill, 10% of clinicians rated spirituality as important or very important. So there's this dissonance between the experience of the consumers, as we call them, clients, patients, and those who are treating them. So that can be an issue. So why is spirituality rated so high? I don't know. My guess is that if we sort of did a poll and asked people what's the most important things in your life, generally you're going to say family and you're going to say health. People might reluctantly say career, even though they spend half their life doing it. So, they're important. The reality is with most people, particularly with a chronic mental illness, they'll struggle to hold down a job. They'll struggle to hold down long-term, committed, loving, faithful relationships. Struggle to have a family, and they certainly don't have good health, either mentally or physically. So I think that these important things that we value are things that they're not necessarily going to be able to achieve, and so they're looking for something bigger, something deeper, something more to give, hope and meaning and so on in their life. So that's my theory. When we talk about mental illness, one of the things to understand is that we operate particularly under a medical model. So people have to be diagnosed with a mental illness, and there are factors involved in that. So unless a psychiatrist can diagnose you, you can't get treatment. Unless you're diagnosed, then you're probably not going to get a disability pension. So there's factors that need that. But of course, this is very imprecise. So there's two systems. One is the American system, the Diagnostic Statistical Manual, or the English system, the International Classification of Diseases. But all of these, what they do is they have a whole range of mental illnesses. And under each mental illness, they have a list of symptoms, right? So, for example, schizophrenia. So if a doctor's going to diagnose you with schizophrenia, they've got to look and to see how many of these symptoms you exhibit. And if you exhibit 7, I can diagnose you. But if you've only got 5, well, I can't. But those symptoms are still there, and the people have still got to manage those symptoms, and those around them have still got to manage those symptoms. So it's a very imprecise, and diagnoses aren't necessarily all that helpful, because we've still got to deal with whatever symptoms people are struggling with in their mental illness. I think there's two, when we're talking about mental illness, there's two principal areas. So the first is thought disorders. So the classic thought disorder is schizophrenia, but it's also anxiety disorders and so on. And personality disorders. And then we have mood disorders. So that the classic mood disorders are bipolar and depression and so on. So these are two different types. But I think we need to also distinguish between a mental illness and what's called a psychosis or a psychotic episode. So a psychosis, people can have a psychosis and not end up with an enduring mental illness. In fact, most people don't. So we get a lot of drug-induced psychoses, and those people, don't end up with a mental illness, an enduring mental illness. Antipsychotics are pretty good, actually, and they do bring people down. But a psychosis is a false belief that's genuinely held, right? A genuinely held false belief. So you just can't say, oh, don't be stupid. Of course, that's not true. That doesn't work. They genuinely hold that false belief. Now, how you deal with that is important. I don't know if you've noticed, but in the last couple of weeks, the Victorian police particularly have been in a bit of strife over the way they've dealt with people with mental illness issues. But I want to counter that with a little story, all right? This is a story about police who have a good understanding of mental illness dealing with a situation. So there was this situation where there was this guy standing in the middle of a roundabout, and he was selectively throwing stones at the windscreens of cars. Not every car, but certain cars, he would throw stones at the windscreen. Well, this actually upset some of the drivers. So the cops were called. Now, the cops came, but one guy, right? One guy came, not the sort of TRG and all that sort of stuff. And he just slowly walked over to the bloke and said, what's going on? And he said, They're aliens. They've come to attack us. It's a serious. And the cop said, boy, is that right? And he said, well, I think this is a bigger issue than we can handle. We've really got to develop a proper plan to deal with this. What about you coming back to me to the station, and we'll work out a plan of how we're going to deal with this? So the guy willingly got in the cop car and went back to the station, and then eventually got mental health. So what he was doing was working with the delusion, working with the psychosis, right? Genuinely held belief, just false, but worked with it to get people into a safe situation. So that's the difference when people understand the nature of mental illness and therefore can deal with that situation. I think one of the sort of got a bit of a focus. I don't want to talk a lot about. I think I've only got 25 minutes, haven't I? Yeah. So you might have to pull me up, because I can dribble on a little bit sometimes. But one of the issues that often comes up is that, particularly with mental illnesses, they get a diagnosis, they get treated with medication by the psychs. These are not cures. These are medications to try and deal with the symptoms, right? The problem is they don't necessarily completely deal with the symptoms, and they have side effects. So with schizophrenia particularly, so the classic schizophrenia symptom is hearing voices, auditory hallucinations, they call it. So hearing voices. So they have medications that dull the voices, right? But the problem is that side effects of the medication means they end up with drooling problems, they end up with weight gain, lethargy, and for young blokes, erectile dysfunction. So sometimes the symptoms, the side effects of the medication are just as bad as the symptoms of the illness, particularly when the symptoms of the illness aren't going away altogether. So you've got to deal with the side effects and the symptoms at the same time, even though the symptoms might be a little bit suppressed. So it's always a difficult choice. You know, guys will say, look, I want to gum off the medication. I don't want to have to deal with both. And that's, you know, that works sometimes. Insight's really good if people can, in terms of managing the symptoms of their illness and so on. One of the things, and particularly talking about spirituality and mental health, one of the issues that often comes up are delusions. So in bipolar, people often have delusions of grandeur. You know, so they're going to be the biggest, better, and all that sort of stuff. But they also have delusions about who they are. In Greylands, for the 13 years I was there, we had any number of Jesus. We had God. We had archangels. We had the Messiah. We had a bloke who was the general of directors. That was his little euphemism. And we had the Mary, and sometimes the Mary had an Immaculate Conception. But we never had an Elvis Presley. Not once. I would have thought someone in their delusion would have had Elvis Presley. But no, invariably, the delusions were of a religious nature. I don't know why. Funny story. All right. Lock Ward at Greylands, and I'm doing a little prayer and pray service. So I have a little bit of music, and we're going to have a reading and a discussion and a prayer time. And we had a guy in there, Ron, right? And Ron was bipolar, and he was quite elevated, and he was Jesus, right? Anyway, we get in there, and I sort of select a song, and I turn it on. No, he says, I want a different song. And he gets up and he tries to sort of change the song on the CD. And then it's not loud enough. Well, come on, turn it up. I say, no, you'll disturb the other patients. And anyway, so we got through the song, and then I said, well, now we're going to have a reading. No, I want to pick the reading. And he sort of, anyway, one of the other blokes said, look, for goodness sake, Ron, sit down, shut up, and let the pastor lead the service. And he stood up and he said, no, I want to lead the service. I've waited 2,000 years to lead a service. Anyway, I said, well, if you waited that long, you'll wait a bit longer because I'm leading this one. So that's sort of part of the delusion that comes.